Off the Ball, GAA.
2 years of hurt, it's a genuine thing, like, Joe. They were a long 2 years. Yeah, it's hard to put into words, really, but I suppose when we came back at the start of this year, it just felt like there was something different, Joe.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Sunday Paper Review on Off the Ball.
The Galway races, you touched upon it there briefly, Glenn Ryan, and Meade has his big guns trained on Galway again. Don McLean back at the Sunday Times. Trainers hoping to create more memories at a special festival he has enormous affection for. He goes there with some serious chances. Just a quote from Noel Meade. It always has an enormous attraction for country people, Galway. A lot of credit for the success of Galway. He's got to go to Luke Mullins. He kept bigging up the big races. The supporting races were worth very little then, but the big races were big and everybody wanted to be there, have runners there, have winners there. It's caught everybody's imagination. This is back to pinch hitter winning the Galway Hurdle in 1982. And the attraction continues today. To quote Noel Meade, it's a people's festival. You can see ordinary fellows in the parade ring, a handicapper's meeting, and I hope that never changes. Lads get a big kick out of having a runner in a 0-70 handicap. I see a few more novice hurdles in there now, but I hope they don't change that. So you must enjoy the week, Glenn, when you do go down, do you?
Yeah, unfortunately, COVID put a stop to our hiatus down there. We never managed to get that crew back together since, but God, we had a number of brilliant years down there. At the same spot, meeting the same people,
yeah,
every year. Mark Landers, Tom O'Brien, fellas that you didn't have to pick up the phone to organise to meet them. You knew where they were going to be, and you spent 2 days nearly at the same spot having the same crack. And it's a magical festival, you know. The horses are great, but I think I could have been down there for whatever 12 or 13 years. I don't think I've seen the horses run around the track. I think the Budweiser tent wasn't properly situated. Yeah. Thankfully, there's a big screen down the far end. but at the same time, we had great laughs, and it's a great. It does brings everybody together. Brings people across all generations and all areas. And
well, on Tuesday we've got a racing pot event with Off the Ball, and we have Joe Canning there once again, who's had an interest in horses. Barry Geraghty, Conor O'Dwyer, myself and Johnny Ward, 2:00 in Mary Mullins Bar. So folks, if you want to get tickets for that, offtheball.com/events. But it is, I would call, the People's Race Week, I think, is a good way of Nomi describing it. Orla, It's a social festival as well as a racing festival. And you can kind of maybe go in earlier in the week when it's kind of low key, and then it builds up to the place and the hurdle, and then there's almost a different crowd comes in for the weekend.
Yeah, and it is actually. It's very different stretches. You know, people go down and it's very hard to get to last the full week down and go.
Oh, yes, I've tried, but I've failed.
And you'd be one of many, I suspect, who's done that. But for years, a friend of mine was managing a restaurant down in Galway, so we had free digs. We used to go down and... God love her, she was working all hours, so we used to go down and camp in her apartment for a few days. Never managed the whole of race week, but camped there for a few days. And it's just such crack around the city. You know, you go walk down Shop Street and there's people sitting out having a pint before they head out to the track, depending on whether it's the afternoon or the evening meeting. But it is a completely different festival to a fairy house or a Punch's Town. And, you know, you just went along, and whether you were into racing or not particularly, you followed Noel Meade for the National Hunt races and Dermot Weld for the flat ones, and you wouldn't go too far wrong with a couple of bets. But yeah, just a good old week.
We should have valued Keegan Moore, Paul Hayward from The Observer, repurposing the Sunday Independent today. Just a couple of interesting quotes here about Kevin Keegan from Paul. Days after Garfield Sober's death restored the radiance of his life, eulogies for Keegan described an almost farcically rich history in which he'd been a working class Stakhanovite, Bill Shankly project and Liverpool superstar, curly-permed 1970s TV idol, two-time European Footballer of the Year with Hamburg, Newcastle United messiah as a player and manager, and England boss in a reign that ended symbolically in the last game before the old Wembley was torn down. Anyone who could send people running to Woolies to buy Bruce aftershave, as Keegan did, was a stone-cold advertising genius. But Paul is, in a more serious way, talking about the attitude towards Keegan at times where his failures were very much highlighted, that it was a very much a binary approach to whether he succeeded or failed. And in the very last paragraph, I really like this. He was safe in the adulation of Newcastle fans. Maybe the rest of us should have been more appreciative of what Keegan represented, and let's harden him for what he didn't do, and better to make that correction before they die when they're still here to see it. Thought it was great.
It's a nice way to put it, all right, that we should be appreciating people before they die, isn't it? And there was another good piece, actually, Ian Herbert in the
yes.
Mail, and I was stunned by this, where he was talking about how, I mean, obviously, you know, he did his plenty of advertising and he was here, there and everywhere doing that. But the tax in Britain was so penal at the time that he was making hardly anything out of it, that British players had an 82% domestic super tax rate to contend with. Keegan's £2,000 bonus for his contribution to the 1975-1976 title-winning season was reduced to £400 after tax. And then there were surtax demands from the previous year. So that was, you know, part of the reasoning for him leaving Liverpool and going for, going to get a bigger payday. He had seen Johan Cruyff on a 10 grand a week contract at Ajax, and he was looking at it going, he was running all over the place. He racked up 1,000 miles in a week for a promotional trip to the Isle of Man, studio analysis for LWT, an appearance in an All-Star 11 against Brazil, and a fate opening in Real. So he was here, there and everywhere, as well as playing football. It was an extraordinary life.
You're a Nottingham Forest fan, you were telling me, Glenn.
Yeah, yes, for my troubles. Yeah, yeah. I had the same look in management as a lot of the Forest managers are having lately. Nearly a short of time. But Paul Rowan, in his piece there, just recalls the Charity Shield game between Liverpool and Leeds, and Billy Bremner, John Giles. And I think Johnny Giles was portrayed as the villain, which usually he was. And I think they tried to, from reading the piece, they tried to put a divide between Giles and Keegan. But in referencing in the book, Johnny Giles had huge time for Kevin Keegan, and the debate between a Keegan or a dog leash, he sided on Keegan. But again, just getting back to Orla's point, his move to Hamburg seemed to open up a door for so many other players who had feared that journey to break away from the English clubs and to go to the continent. And he seemed to be a man who played, I'd say he lived the way he played. He wore his heart in his sleeve, and if he wanted to do something, he would do it. And to go to Hamburg seemed, when you look back, a very strange move. But everybody seemed to have I suppose I'm going down the soft spot route this morning, but even Irish people seemed to like Kevin Keegan.
Yeah.
He was full of energy. He ran around. He seemed to be a hard worker. He seemed to be very honest on the pitch. And no matter where you're from, you admire players like that.
We're speaking to Glenn Ryan, former Kildare skipper and manager, and Orla McElroy of the Irish Daily Mail on the Sunday Paper Review here on Off the Ball Sunday on News Talk. The Paul Kimmage, Maurice Regan conversations over the last couple of weeks have been fascinating. Really good reading, and definitely would direct people towards that. Maurice Regan of Newtown Anerstud, a racehorse now owner, and has been involved obviously in a disagreement of quite a serious level with John Magnier of Coolmore in recent times. So that's definitely worth reading in the Sunday Independent. The Tour de France, I was almost found at different angles. The Sunday Times, David Walsh, Orla McElroy, and then the Irish Daily Mail, Mark Gallagher. Pogacar, the world's best athlete and teammate, writes David Walsh. You know, what a champion Tadej Pogacar is. He may be the most complete athlete in the world right now, and yet on the final mountain stage, the champion with a love for crossing the line first reminded us that there are things more important than winning. And then Mark's piece is just a bit more, can't get really the past of the Tour de France out of his head. Is that the best way maybe to...
Yeah, that's fair. And it's, you know, the subhead is that the Tour is caught in a trap of troubled history, and that kind of...
Because Pogacar is going for his record equal and will win it, a fifth title now, and to Champs-Élysées in Paris today.
Yeah, and what's to say he won't surpass that with his sixth next year, you know?
Slovenian.
And Mark is just kind of making the point that during the week on TNT, so they're doing the coverage of it, and they did say that, you know, it was Orla Chinui is the host, and she said about how his domination of the sport is such that it will always bring detractors to the table, and what's the feeling within the peloton. So she was talking to Jonathan Vaughters, who was a teammate of Lance Armstrong. And of course, that's the time in cycling and the regime that has cast the suspicions. And also, as we were talking about outside, it sort of left cycling with a smaller audience, and it doesn't hold the place that it once did, where, you know, and okay, Ben Healy is going well for us, but like, there was a big Irish draw for cycling, and the Tour de France came here, and, you know, people used to tune in and watch it a lot. It's not the same way now. And you have to imagine that that sort of Lance Armstrong and all that stuff is what kind of turned people away from it. So they did reference the fact that because of that past history, it informs people's belief that now that, with, like, it must be said with no
evidence,
no, there's no basis for this, but they, you just wonder, is it too good to be true? That if one guy is dominating to this extent, and Mark talks about the fact that the two riders were woken in the wee small hours of last Sunday morning for an unannounced drugs test prior to the 15th stage. Now, this is the kind of thing that would possibly restore confidence to a degree, because he goes on to explain how this microdosing thing of testosterone that you can give small amounts and it goes out of the system within hours. So if you catch, if you test somebody during the middle of the night, at a time where they're not expecting it, as opposed to the more obvious times where people know to avoid, the idea is this, this will catch somebody if they are doing this. So, you know, he talks, Vaughters talks about how when he was, when he obviously was part of that US postal system, he tweeted earlier this week, "I'll roll this grenade down the aisle. 2 a.m. testing is one of the very effective ways to prevent peptide and testosterone microdosing. If UCI had tested us in 2001 at 2 a.m., we'd all have been suspended and saved the sport 25 years of drama. It's unfortunate that Tadej and Jonas have to atone for the shit that we did. However, I'd take some lost sleep for some gained credibility." And I think a lot of people would surely agree with that. You know, that it's is it not worth the hassle of waking somebody up? Okay, it might, you know, throw off your preparations for a stage, being woken at 2 a.m. And I think Podjakar kind of said that he had about 4 hours sleep as a result of it, which is obviously difficult to tackle any stage of the tour, which are, you know, incredibly arduous. But it's surely worth it to try and regain some of the reputation. And it's funny, on the page opposite, Ger Siggins is going back to 1986 and Greg Hand. And it seems like there was so many rows going on between Bernard Hinault and Greg LeMond that at one stage they called a team meeting, and they were up until 4 a.m. or something arguing about the team orders and what was going on. And they went out and rode a stage the next day and were still attacking each other. So it didn't affect them as much, but that was a different reason they were being held up till that hour.
Vaughters, quite candid about how he took performance-enhancing drugs, including EPO, and part of US Postal with Armstrong. That's what Mark also references in that piece.
I know it was probably a dark time in cycling, but I'd say some of the stories that come out of the likes of that, and that was only one story there, the battle between Greg LeMond and Bernard Hinault. And I would actually resonate more with those cyclists now than with anybody currently, because at that time you had Sean Kelly, you had Stephen Roach battling out with these guys. Laurent Fignon was another one there as well that's mentioned. The people that you still remember. Look, it was a dark time, as I say, in terms of what was going on in the background. But some of the stuff that went on, I'd say, was mad. And if you could just look at it in isolation, take the drugs out and see what the side stories were, I'd say it'd be just fascinating to see the extent that people were prepared to go to try and win. And here you see two teammates battling it out, breaking promises and literally being barefaced.
Going back on their word. Yeah.
Going back on the word. Going back on team orders and to try and get over the line. The drugs was a small part. Greed was the biggest part as far as I can see.
Yeah, and I wonder, was it like at the time there wasn't a huge amount of sport on TV, so we watched whatever we got, and part of it was watching the tour. But it's funny, Ger goes on to mention about how that stage where they had a time trial, and LeMond and Hino were still going head to head. But that stage saw an incident that became one of the key revelations of Paul Kimmage's memoir, Rough Ride. And he wrote that during the final stage, he witnessed riders injecting substances with needles, telling him that they were not afraid to get caught, since only the stage winner and top riders were tested. And that's possibly the start, isn't it? Really leading into the years where that we began to wonder about what was going on with cycling, and until, you know, Lance Armstrong was finally admitted to, caught, whatever.
Yeah, one of many. And one of many as well.
And one of many, of course, yeah. Yeah, but it is interesting that they are trying to combat this mindset now that, you know, they are this idea of 2 a.m. testing, or trying to do things differently. They are trying to combat what clearly is an opinion out there that people wonder about cycling now because of what went on in the past.
Page 22 of the Sunday World, we say a tearful goodbye to legendary sport editor Gibbo. The passing of Eamon Gibson leaves a void in Irish sports journalism that will not easily be filled. He belonged to a generation that shaped modern newspaper sports coverage, John Brennan writes in the Sunday World. So Eamon very sadly passed away on Thursday at just 64. Our condolences with his family and with his friends and his colleagues. Eamon, I remember meeting him down at Coolmore in 2009. We were there on a morning to go to Aidan O'Brien's yard, and we really enjoyed a couple of days. Everybody enjoyed it. I remember meeting Eamon there, and John writes, he and I were colleagues in the Irish Press and Sunday World for a combined 40 years, first working in hot metal newspaper production, where being able to read upside down was a necessary skill to get the paper out before entering the digital age together. There are two types of sports journalists, those who covered national and international matches, interview talent, and those who remained in the office, coming up with ideas, designing pages, crafting stories, selecting pictures, and writing cracking headlines. As the sports editor of the Sunday World until 2024, Eamon was very much a giant of the latter cohort. He had a keen mind, a keen eye, and a keen wit. Under Eamon's astute and imaginative direction, the newspaper became renowned for its award-winning sports coverage. Couple of good stories here. He'd often burst the tense production atmosphere on a busy Saturday with an amusing observation, like the day the RT Angelas rang out in the newsroom before the 6-1 news, and a smiling face popped up from behind the TV to ask if anybody knew the time. He was an notable boxer in his youth, a talented artist, grew up beside Brian Kerr and Temple Oak. He was involved in the football club there. But there was a day when the Temple Oak team had a cup semi-final replay fixed for 5 o'clock, but he also had to put the Sunday World edition together. As kickoff approached, Eamon could be heard on the phone, feverishly giving instructions to a stand-in coach as to what to do, a conversation that ended with Eamon booming, "Tell Barry to hold the line," all across the office, Barry hopefully being the centre half on the team. So lovely words from John Brennan about Eamon Gibson, of course, his brother as well, Des, involved in Irish journalism too.
Yeah, and like it's a lovely piece and a great tribute to a man who, well loved by everybody who worked with him. I didn't know him personally. Like himself, I was generally tied to a production desk and not out and about at many events, so our paths never crossed. But I know he was held in high regard, and also by all the members of the Dublin Journalist Golf Society, with whom there's another good yarn about him going to Lahinch, which is a staple of the calendar for the Dublin journalists. And the crack they would have had there. But yeah, I'm sure very young age, and I'm sure he'll be sadly missed by all his friends and family and colleagues.
Yes, well said, Orla. Eamon Gibson, may he rest in peace. And a newspaper person, it's a different world now, but there's something, the unique characters, the qualities you need to have to put the paper together under the stress of those deadlines, as you know yourself, Orla.
Yeah, and like I worked for a number of Sunday newspaper editors in the days where, like, it was absolutely paramount that you had to hit your deadlines, and would have worked in the Sunday Indo under Aynan O'Sullivan, and remember, you know, you were in charge of putting together the racing page, and no matter come hell or high water, you had to get that racing page ready to go in the paper at 6 p.m. And that was gone, and that was very early, and I'd be sitting there going, I don't have the results from Killarney, and Aynan would be telling me, just get anything in, I don't care, football, send the page, get it out. So it would have been a very high pressure job, and it's always good to have a bit of crack, and it certainly sounded like Gibbo was able to, you know, leaven the atmosphere on a night like that.
Glenn Ryan, are you enjoying this new game? Do you think it's breathed life into Gaelic football? I mean, there's been such a positivity about the Championship 2026 ahead of now, the 3:30 throw-in for Kerry and Mayo today.
Ah, yeah, it's revolutionised the game, really. And what I really enjoy about it is that there's a cohort of players playing the game now that were becoming redundant. That, you know, because the game had become so defensive and more attuned to just somebody who could maybe just run up and down the pitch, and maybe if you're a good tackler, there's always space for you. But there's so many players who've played so well in the Championship wouldn't have been in the Championship 2 or 3 years ago. Patrick Coughlin-Byrne maybe being one, a big, strong, ball-winning midfielder, who may not be the quickest to getting up and down the pitch, which would have been required of him maybe 2 or 3 years ago. But now the role of winning primary ball in the middle of the pitch is so important. There is a position out for the likes of him. A corner forward who, again, may not have either the inclination or the want or the physique to be in the corner forward position 1 minute or in a corner back position the next. There's now, but could kick points to beat the band. There's now a role for the likes of a McCarron, a player who can just kick two-pointers, who can come in and do what his job is. I remember playing Armagh up in Armagh in one of our early league games, and Jimmy Hyland, who to me was just an absolute pint scoring machine, early in the second half ran the far side of me out off the pitch following an Armagh corner back running down into a position just to get Jimmy away from his position. So he was down as a corner forward, a corner back, when he should have been corner forward, and I don't think he got a shot off that night. Whereas now that type of player will be in the position where he should be, yeah, doing the job that he should be. And we were starting to lose those players. Those players didn't want to play because they were asked to do jobs that they didn't really need to do. So it's even though it's a more attractive game to look at, even as a spectacle, I think it's a more attractive game for everybody now to play, even goalkeepers. You know, before goalkeepers, the player who ended up in goals, again, may not have been the fittest or whatever the case may be. It was getting to the stage where goalkeepers had to be able to score a point down the other end of the pitch as well as do everything else. Now the goalkeepers are kept where they should be, and we need good shot stoppers. We need a goalkeeper with a good pair of hands. We need a goalkeeper who can kick the ball out and can communicate well back to what we needed.
Who's going to win, Orla?
I had this hunch for Mayo for the last couple of weeks, but I just, the more I look at Kerry, the more I kind of think, I don't know how, as I said earlier, it's always impossible till it's done, but I don't know how they stop Kerry. I think they've too much control. I think it'll be Kerry.
Glenn Ryan, final word for you. Who wins today?
It's hard to say anything other than a Kerry win. I'll be heading out now. It'll get hard to go by the Palace without calling in there. And
why not?
Meeting a few of the Kerry lads, and that's all I'll be telling them anyway. But I really do hope our final reflects the brilliant year we've had.
Yes.
In terms of the football, and that I think that's the most important thing. It's going to be a brilliant spectacle. And as I said earlier, if Mayo are in the hunt with 10 minutes to go, the atmosphere in Croke Park is just going to be something that you only experience when Mayo are there.
Glenn Ryan, former Kildare captain and manager, and Orla McElroy of the Irish Daily Mail, thank you so much for coming on the Sunday Paper Review today.
Cheers.
Thank you. Enjoy the game.
Thank you.
Forward to it.
And we'll speak again. So, folks, we have Off the Ball on your radio 1-7 here on News Talk. We got reports and analysis from Paddy Andrews, James O'Donoghue, and Tommy Rooney, all at Croke Park for the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship final between Kerry and Mayo. Half three throw in. Rory Grugan here as well from Armagh to provide studio punditry. Or we're also going to preview the Galway races in more detail with Johnny Ward after 6 o'clock on our racing pod. Going to return on your wireless at 1 and we'll chat then.
The Sunday Paper Review on Off the Ball.
Off the Ball. GAA.
2 years of hurt. It's a genuine thing, like, Joe. They were a long 2 years. Yeah, it's hard to put into words, really, but I suppose when we came back at the start of this year, it just felt like there was something different. Joe.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.